You're listening to the Pinto and White Shadow Show on KFGO.com and 740thefan.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 015 podcast of the Pinto and White Shadow Show here on 740thefan.com, KFGO.com. I am, of course, Daniel Pinto Gunnarsson. You can follow me on Twitter at PintoKFGO. My co-host, Brad, the White Shadow Jones. You can follow him at Twitter.
Yeah, I'm at the Bison Guy.
You can also friend us on Facebook. Send us an email, pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our KFGO.com podcast page. We've had plenty of comments left there. Leave a comment when we post this thing on Facebook, or get back to us on Twitter as well. You can also find this show on iTunes. All you have to do is put in the Pinto and White Shadow Show, and it pops up right there. And you can find us all over the interweb. 015 podcast. Really glad that we've made it this far. Nobody has told us to stop. Now,
I appreciate that they're either enjoying it or at the very least turning a blind eye.
You walked in tonight to the studio.
I did.
And you have a box with you. Yeah. UPS showed up to your door this weekend, it looks like.
Yes.
And what's in this? What's in the box?
I would not tell you beforehand. I just walked in and I said, I've got her open.
I literally have no idea what this is.
So I play in a fantasy football league.
Okay.
With a group of my friends, and decided this year, after doing some looking and reading through Matthew Berry's book, which was phenomenal, that I thought that we needed a traveling trophy.
Oh, okay, for your fantasy football league.
For our fantasy football league.
Okay.
Okay. And I found the perfect thing. So here, let me grab it out of the box here.
What? Oh my gosh. this is ridiculous.
Is this not pretty much the greatest thing you've ever seen?
Fantasy
which I know works
football
really well on
champion.
Podcast.
We'll take a picture. We'll post it on our points blog page, whatever.
Yeah.
We don't have a blog page anymore. It's called Pinto's Points, but we do our email conversation on there. Oh boy.
This is a professional wrestling style title belt. Black leather, gold. I mean this is heavy duty right here. I mean that's not plastic. It is. This thing is shiny.
Yes.
And this is what we have for the winner of this year's fantasy football league.
Now, here's a question.
Here, I got to pass this across here.
Okay, let me hang on to this.
You need to
hang
on.
Is this thing heavy?
That's pretty heavy.
That is like interesting.
Yeah.
Now, are you going to be able to add names? Like, there's space right here. You could put record and names.
It's intended to be able to do that. There's a couple spaces along the strap that have the ability to get names engraved. So
now, if you win the fantasy football championship, I'm just going to hang on to it right here.
Yeah, you go ahead. Right on the shoulder. Looks good.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. If you win, are you going to wear it throughout a podcast?
Absolutely. I might wear it for the entire year.
Oh,
I've been playing fantasy for a long time and won exactly one league this spring, a fantasy NBA league.
I have to ask you.
Yeah.
How much did this set you back?
Well, see, that's the nice thing about getting it for the league is that everybody chipped in. I got enough people. I got a majority
everybody,
vote. Everybody
chipped in. Everybody has to chip in. How majority is the majority vote? How many people in the league?
It's a 12-team league, so I was able to get 7 people that agreed.
Was it a hard 7? Did you have to campaign like Obama back in the day?
I was pretty excited about it. So this goes back to my, growing up loving professional wrestling. And it was something that we had to have.
Oh, my goodness.
So, overall, I mean, it cost each person about $10. It was $110.
Holy cow. I mean, in the end, that's not too bad when you're just out $10.
Yeah.
But if I'm in the league, I'm going, why?
Why?
But I suppose,
because
because
it's awesome.
I'm
that's
handing
why.
It back to you.
Yeah.
I don't want to get my fingers. I don't even deserve to have this. I'm not even in
I don't
league.
Either. But I'm going to, it was my idea and I'm the commissioner of the league and I get to hold on to it for the next 3 months, and then I'm never going to see it again because I'll never win the league. But this thing is legit.
Yeah, that thing is legit. I'm not gonna lie. We'll have to take a picture of it.
It's one of the dumbest things I've ever bought in my life, and I just don't care.
We'll put it on the blog. We'll put it on the ongoing wager blog, just because that's something we do.
And I might just take this every time that I win an argument with you. I might just take this and just throw it over the shoulder. Here,
if you carry, if you bring it to every podcast and then just slap it every time you win an ongoing wager when we talk about it, oh my gosh, that would be embarrassing. A reminder at KFGO.com, the blog, the Pinto and White Shadow Show blog, no longer exists. What it's been replaced with is Pinto's Points blog. That's my.
Because he's very egotistical.
Yes, this is true. That's my blog I do for both 740thefan.com and KFGO. KFGO.com. A lot of postings. I usually post every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday on there. And so you can check it out. We'll have the ongoing wager, our email conversations, and Brad and I will routinely contribute to that. So nice little championship belt there. I'm a
Thank
little
you.
Stunned that you actually went out and purchased, boy, $110.
Well, yeah, I know. It's so dumb.
Oh, single men and money. That's, I suppose, what happens when that goes down. So let's get into this 1015 podcast, and we'll start out with
local.
All right. NDSU takes down Missouri State earlier this weekend, Saturday. Brad, you had a lot of duties going on with homecoming.
I did.
With working for NDSU and whatnot. I had a wedding, which I showed up late for, but that's a whole other thing. I thought the wedding was at 4 o'clock, and I'm sitting around, and I'm watching the Bison game, and I text one of my buddies who was going to. They go, hey, yeah, just a reminder, this is at 2 o'clock, I text him. I had not showered, shaved, done anything. Hey, yeah, wedding's at 4, right? He goes, no, it's at 2:30. So had to hustle up. My girlfriend and I were late by a half an hour, but we saw him introduced. Congratulations to Nick and Ashley Sheppy. We got to see him introduced that way, and we got to go to the fun part, the reception,
sure.
Which it worked out. So anyways, neither you or I had an opportunity to attend the game, but we did watch a good majority of it,
I listened
to a lot of it,
yeah,
too.
And I was emceeing the watch party on campus, so I saw the whole thing.
The first question I have for you is, there was an article put out by Forum Writer, the beat writer for the Forum and covers NDSU, Jeff Kolpak, and I read it, and he talked about expectations of Bison fans, and he feels that they're too high, and he felt that fans were a little disappointed in the fact that NDSU gave up 26 points to Missouri State, a team with one win.
The fact that NDSU won by a lot of points.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the 41-26 win for NDSU over Missouri State?
You know, I don't do this often. I disagree with Jeff a little bit. Are the expectations high? Yes. But for this particular team, are they too high? I don't think so. I mean, obviously they're not going to play perfect football because nobody does, but I don't know that the expectations could be too high for this team. We talked about that was one of the first questions that we asked when we started doing this podcast. What is a successful season for this team? And we said at worst you could maybe consider it a successful season if they got back to Frisco and lost, maybe. But probably the only way that this season is successful is if you win a third straight
But
title.
You're talking overall expectations, and I think what Kolpak is getting at is the game-to-game expectations. You're not playing in the BCS here. You don't have to have wins by impressive margins.
I understand that.
But
when you are the overwhelming, unanimous favorite, and you start out the season by winning a game on national TV, and you get College Game Day there, and all these things, and some of those, you know, are obviously a little out of their control, but I don't know that that's necessarily unreasonable to expect things to be very, 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 very good and close to perfect every game. It's the expectations that this team has set. Now, we can have a different conversation next year about what, and I think that's something that if we're still doing this, that we will have, obviously. But for this year's team, the expectations are really, really high, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah, that's true. What I feel is that the game-to-game expectations need to be tampered down a little bit. And okay. I knew that going into this game. Missouri State has been an opponent for whatever reason.
They've just given us a little bit of trouble.
Whatever reason, because they've never been good
when
the NDSU has played them. But you look back 2 years ago, it was a 3-0 loss on the road, and that was a team, or not 2 years ago, three years ago. It was a 3-0 loss to a team that NDSU should have just ripped apart.
Yeah.
Year before that, I think they ended up losing 21-17 at home in the Fargo Dome to NDSU. Missouri State has given them fits.
So let's bring it to something else that happened this weekend.
What's that?
The Denver Broncos being favored by 27 points against Jacksonville.
Yes.
Is it disappointing that Denver won by whatever amount it was? It was in the teens, I think, that they won by. Is that disappointing?
No.
Okay.
No. And so, is it disappointing that NDSU gave up 26 points and a couple big plays to Missouri State? Is it disappointing to you as an NDSU fan?
Is it disappointing to me? No. It really isn't. And again, we've been friends for a long time. You know that I'm generally the person pumping the brakes on saying,
right.
Hey, get a little perspective here, folks. the perspective on this team is, you know what? You expect this team to rip apart a team coming in 1-5.
And they did. They won 41-26. Let me read you. And again,
I understand where fans are coming from with this one, and I don't know that it's necessarily unreasonable what fans are asking. Is it possible? Probably not. But at the same time, I don't know that it's unreasonable. I know that sounds like a very much semantics, and but
I think it is unreasonable to look at a team and go, you need to beat Missouri State and you need to beat this team by 40 and you need to rip them apart. Because, again, NDSU, for the most part, and I talked about this last week with the UNI game, NDSU dominated the game. And fans react to the score because that's the only thing they see. They don't have stats, and they don't really think about what actually happened. And then they react right away. And it is an emotional reaction. But I feel that if Monday go around the water cooler, I talk to people at the office and they're going to go, yeah, I wasn't that impressed. You know, Brock Jensen had that pick six and they gave up that big touchdown pass. And, you know, I don't know. It just seemed like they struggled a little bit. And then I go, do you realize they only gave up one first down through the air? They gave up 45 yards of rushing on 27 attempts. Brock Jensen threw for 300 yards, the first time in his career he's ever done that. 3 touchdowns. Zach Vrah had a career day. You know, the time of possession probably wasn't that big of a favor for NDSU, right? No, it was 35 minutes NDSU TOP, which, again, follows the script. Fans look at a score and go, well, I mean, he gave up that pick six to the Schaffitzel. Bless you. And so that's how fans feel it is. And I think that's what Jeff was getting at, is that they look at a score automatically go, blah.
Look at you not taking the fan side. What is happening here?
I don't know. We're finding our paths in lives. You're a fan. I'm not. I don't know.
apparently. The one thing I will say is at no point, even when, you know, Missouri State did make a couple of those big plays, there wasn't any point that I felt like the Bison didn't have the game in hand.
Yeah, I
felt like that against Northern Iowa. I did not feel like that at all against Missouri State. They gave up a big play. They gave up the pick six. It's like, okay, fluky. We're going to be fine.
Yeah. And you think about it, the second quarter was bad. Because Missouri State had a decent drive, and NDSU rushing-wise just wasn't good in the first half. And those things will happen. Mm-hmm. But we can go back to the expectations and how all that stuff gets magnified, you know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, fans expect so much, but you have to just relax because there's going to be games, first halves, second halves, that happen where they don't need to happen in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And again, Missouri Valley opponent, which NDSU's had trouble with for whatever reason. So I that's why I want to say, hey, just, whoa, let's like relax here. I'm completely on Jeff's side with this, that the expectations game to game need to be tampered a little bit. Because again, we're not playing FBS football here.
Again, is it possible for what fans expect to happen? Probably not, but I get it with this team.
Let's take a look around the Missouri Valley Football Conference, looking at some of the standings after this week. NDSU's win puts them 3-0 in the conference, 6-0 overall. Looking around the conference, South Dakota at home against Indiana State. Is South Dakota starting to surprise you a little bit with these home victories? I mean, Missouri State's not that big of a deal, but what about Indiana State winning 17-14 there? And we're going based purely off a score, but it's a win for South Dakota. Does that surprise you at all? The Yotes.
I mean, they scored all 17 in the first quarter, which means they went at least 45 minutes without scoring a point in that game.
Yeah.
I mean,
offensively, they're not good. I mean, they only had like 17 last week too.
Not concerned. No, I mean, I'm not concerned in the manner that they're going to be any sort of factor in the Missouri Valley or the playoffs or anything that's big picture wise going to matter.
Shakir Bell had only 80 yards of rushing, and then, oh boy, they only had 82 yards passing between two quarterbacks for Indiana State. They just didn't look good. I think what this speaks to is you more so have an ugly game than you have an impressive win by South Dakota.
Yes.
Because I'm looking at their stats. Their quarterback, Kevin Earl, had 2 interceptions, 165 yards. Their running back, Trevor Boma, 145 yards rushing and 2 scores. 17-14 game, Indiana State, really not that good. But even so, South Dakota's, they're starting to come along a little bit. And, You know, if they become a factor in the Missouri Valley, does that affect South Dakota State more so than NDSU, or does it affect those two programs overall where teams are going, you know, South Dakota, I want to go try them out. I like the scheme. I like
the
coach.
As far as the recruiting side of things go. I find it hard to believe right now that in the Missouri Valley, if NDSU comes knocking, it's real tough to...
Yeah, and that's how I feel.
Yeah.
But maybe with South Dakota State, when you're recruiting in the state too...
Yes.
You know, between that stretch of Vermillion and Brookings, yeah, I think we might see a little bit of effect, you know, where a high schooler goes, I'd rather try Vermillion. I feel more comfortable there. So,
words that people have said how often?
Yeah, never.
I'd rather try Vermillion.
Yeah, never. We probably
just lost all our Vermillion listeners. Yeah, so that's my bad. I'll take the ratings hit on that one.
South Dakota State, 38-14 win over Western Illinois. That is what it is. South Dakota State going to go out and beat a really good team. Or a really bad team. South Dakota State beating a really bad team, Western Illinois. Youngstown State, 59-21. As we start to kind of get halfway through the season, especially halfway through the conference season, are you surprised with Youngstown State being 3-0 in the conference?
I told you when we picked teams that could give NDSU trouble when we took our two teams for one of our wager bets, Youngstown was one of mine. So, I'm not surprised. They just always seem to have a decent team and a team that's going to give some problems, and they might be better than what we initially thought this year. So I'm excited to see that game. I think that's going to be a fun game.
I think Youngstown State is surprising a lot of people. Their one loss at Michigan State, a 55-17 loss, but they've put up a lot of points so far this year.
Yeah.
Already three times 50-plus points on the season. Pardon me, four times with 50 – no, three times. I'm reading the wrong number. Morehead State, Duquesne, they had 67 against Morehead State, 59 against Duquesne, and then last week, 59 against Illinois State. This is where we're going to find out how good Youngstown State is at the end of the season in November.
Yep.
You remember November. At UNI, at home against NDSU, and at home against South Dakota State. Those are their last three games.
Yeesh.
They have Western Illinois next week, and then they're on a bye, and then they're at South Dakota. So the next two games they have, they should win,
Okay. Following
the script, and then you're really going to find out how good they are.
Yeah.
We'll see. I think Youngstown State's a yet-to-be-determined team for me, but it's obvious their offense can put up a buttload of points. That is for sure. The game that I think we have to talk about, UNI losing in overtime to Southern Illinois. Dale Lennon, the 3-4. Again, I said Southern Illinois was
a
team.
That was one of your teams.
A team to watch out for. Right now, Southern Illinois in the standings, 2-1 overall. Or 2-1 in the conference, 4-3 overall. This is where NDSU has to go next week. So let's kind of transfer or move on into that conversation.
Yeah.
SIU, now does this game become a little bit more scary when you're going to Carbondale and you saw that they can beat a good team like UNI?
Southern Illinois is always scary. They're just never any fun to play. And it adds a little spice now that they've taken out Northern Iowa. I think the Bison are looking for that bye week really, really, really badly right now. They really want that bye week.
Why
to come
do you say
up.
That?
I think they're just dinged up. They're just nicked up, and they got injuries all over the place. And they really would like a bye week just to, after all, with all the things that have taken place over the last month and a half, I think a week to just... deep breath. Let's just get everybody healthy. Let's just kind of calm down and maybe quiet things just for a week, just to do a little reset on the season. I think that's something that they really are looking forward to. And I would feel as an NDSU onlooker, I would feel more comfortable with this game if it was after a bye rather than before.
Injury-wise, how did NDSU come out? I suppose we'll find out more so on Monday.
Yeah.
Because that's usually, the Saturday one is a pretty much a reactionary. Everybody's hurt. Monday,
but
you can.
There was people like Little John that didn't play.
Little John didn't play. Gimstead was dinged up. He didn't play. Plankers didn't play. That's on the offensive line.
Yeah.
Cole Jurek has two bad shoulders from what I heard. He played. He played through it. The Little John one. Did you notice maybe a difference offensively because of the dual threat at quarterback? I don't think so. I think that Esley Thornton did a good job of holding his own in that game. I think maybe next week, if Little John isn't ready to go, we're going to see maybe a difference because, looking at these stats, Brad, Southern Illinois dominated this game. They had 451 yards of total offense. They held the ball for 37 minutes. They had 113 yards from their running back. Looks like Malcolm Agnew is his name. Corey Faulkner, the quarterback, had 252 yards throwing and a couple scores. Did throw a pick six, which goes into that. But you look at these stats, and then David Johnson rushing, 11 attempts, 19 yards.
See, and that's the thing. If you're going to beat NDSU, you got to play defense because you might be able to score a little bit, but not a lot. It's just Missouri State is the exception and not the rule.
Right.
So you got to stop the Bison offense.
The two worst games that NDSU has had this year defensively, and this is going to sound funny, but the two worst games they've had were Ferris State and this one last week, Missouri State. And it really wasn't that bad rushing-wise. Missouri State couldn't run the ball. They were one-dimensional. We're noticing now that you have to throw if you want to try and score against NDSU because there are some holes in that secondary. But again, that goes into the cover two scheme. You're really kind of lax. You're letting people get those yardage. Yeah. It's all about stopping the score.
Yes. And that's the thing that's a little bit worrisome, and I'm sure for the coaching staff, is they've been giving up big plays in the passing game. That's not supposed to happen.
No. They routinely don't give up big plays. They'll give up the 15, the 20-yarder. We've seen things that have happened here and there over the course of the last 3 years, but we haven't seen 52-yard touchdown bombs. You know, we haven't seen Marcus Williams get burned. And we saw Kansas State, to a point, do that in the secondary. They were able to kind of pick them apart. But when you get into the Missouri Valley, you got to be able to be better defensively when it comes to passing. So Southern Illinois with a big win, and now NDSU goes to Carbondale. How do you feel this one's going to go out?
I'm nervous. As far as being a Bison fan, you picked them. Dale Lennon's always tough. I mean, that 3-4 is, it's always given NDSU a little bit of trouble. It's a different look, and you know, it's going to. I don't feel great about it, about making that trip. I really don't.
Do you pick Southern Illinois to win? No.
No.
Give me an early score, soft score.
A soft score?
Like a soft opening. Soft score.
I mean, I would 27-20, I don't think, is out of the realm of possibility, something like that.
I feel more comfortable picking a lower score, but I do feel the same way that you do, that this is going to be close. Southern Illinois, like we've always said, and even Dale Lennon, when he was coaching at the University of North Dakota, and now at Southern Illinois, he likes to play a 3-4, which we've seen can give NDSU fits offensively, and we saw it even in the first half against Missouri State. The NDSU is just unable to get the run game going, and everything flows through the run game. So if Southern Illinois can come up with solid three quarters of stop in the run, you know, they'll be right there in the fourth quarter. I don't think it's going to happen. Again, NDSU hasn't lost on the road since 2010. They have a lot of experience. It sounds funny. They know how to win, but again, they know how to win. You saw that against Kansas State. You saw that against the University of Northern Iowa. I think you see that against Southern Illinois. I think it's going to be, I'm going to say 13-10 NDSU.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a low-scoring affair. I think it's going to get physical. I like the point you made about this team needing to get to the bye week because they've just been so beat up. And, again, it's this game, and then they have next after Southern Illinois, it'll be Indiana State on the road. And then it's the bye, and then it's two of the next three are at home with the Youngstown State. So we're getting to the end here, the second half of the schedule. I guess I'm going to ask the question then. First half of the schedule, NDSU 6-0. What has surprised you the most about this NDSU football team through the first half of the season?
Most surprising thing? Probably that teams have started to say, hey, we're going to go at Marcus Williams. That's probably been the most surprising teams because you look at everything else. I mean, they've followed the script that I thought. I was a big Brock Jensen supporter, a big fan coming in, and he's done what I thought he would. Ryan Smith has been solid as a first option. The running backs have been of solid tandem, and the defense, for the most part, has been good. But I think if anything has been surprising, that's probably been it. Because I don't think people really saw that coming into the year.
The most surprising thing to me has been, and it is a good question, but the most surprising thing to me, I think, has been.
Did you just compliment your own question?
Kind of, yeah.
Gosh, that's a really good question that I just asked.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm patting myself on the back. I think the development of Zach Raw and Brock Jensen is something that we all want to believe was there, but we didn't really know because Raw was often injured. And then Ryan Smith, you knew that there was a connection there. Yeah. But again, same thing, often injured, nagging injuries. But we're starting to see this connection, and we're starting to see what made Jensen so good in his sophomore year was that deep threat.
He could throw the ball downfield. Yes. Yeah, that's true, too.
And so Zach Vrah allowing him to do that makes this offense that much tougher. And Brock Jensen, he's the quarterback. Like I said, I called him overrated earlier in the season. Took back that statement.
You'll notice that I haven't brought that up the last few weeks. I've been very nice about
it. I've noticed this. Okay. He's a quarterback that's prone to mistakes. He's not going to, not throw the interceptions. But the thing is, the mistakes are really glaring. Like the pick sixes, that to me seems really... The pick sixes, the pick he threw against Kansas State looked really bad. It's not like he's under throwing guys when he makes the interception. He just doesn't see what he's throwing into. That to me is what his mistakes appear to be. But I think the development of the Vrah Jensen connection deep has been the most surprising thing. So NDSU will move on from that. They moved to 6-0, 3-0 in the conference. Southern Illinois is next week. Brad and I both think they'll win, but they're on the warning alert, upset alert, because Southern Illinois, always a tough team.
Yes.
In the top five, looking around in the FCS, I said if there was any really upsets, we'd talk about it. Towson losing to Villanova. We don't know much about the CAA, the Colonial, but from what I can understand, it's a deep conference this year. And I think Villanova coming up with a win the way they won, too. It wasn't even close. Towson turned the ball over quite a bit. 45-35 victory.
Yeah, they don't play
Villanova.
Defense over there.
Yeah, they really don't. Towson committed 5 turnovers, but were still able to throw for 326 yards through the air. They got a guy by the name of Terrence West, who I want to say it was the original Jerry Rice Award winner, freshman of the year back 2 years ago. He's an outstanding running back. To me, that's not surprising because I think we're finding out for Towson, you're finding out how good they really are against good competition. They beat Connecticut earlier this year, which take that for what you will. But that's the team that you kind of looked at as, okay, they're number 2 right now, undefeated. They had an FBS win. Let's see how they do against good FCS competition. Villanova, they're good. We saw what happened. Maybe Towson was kind of a pretender for the first half. Maybe the most surprising team of the first half in the FCS, but we'll see how the season develops for them. This team scares me. Eastern Illinois, one of the top 5 teams in the nation. I'm not going to try and pronounce their quarterback's name because I don't have a pronunciation key in front of me, but we'll just call him.
That never helped you before.
Yeah, no, it's true. We'll call him Jimmy. Jimmy G. This guy, though, is legit. He is an unbelievable offensive threat. Threw for 306 yards and 5 touchdowns against something called Austin Peay, which, whatever, they're really not that good. But Eastern Illinois offensively was a team I looked at last year and wanted to say, boy, I can't wait to see if they get a chance to play NDSU. They actually got a chance to play South Dakota State last year and got run up pretty good against, they don't play defense, Eastern Illinois. But again, there's always that potential, I think, that for a team that is that good offensively to go, all right, let's see what they can do here. They, of course, get the win. Looking at the top 5, things are going to change. Sam Houston State will stay at 2. NDSU will be at 1. Northern Iowa will drop out of the top 5. Eastern Illinois will get to jump up. Towson will jump out of the top 5. Eastern Washington will move up as well. And I think Montana State. So you're going to have 2 Big Sky teams in the top 5, plus an Ohio Valley team, and then Sam Houston State with everybody looking up at NDSU. Again, Big Sky, we hear about them. Will NDSU get a chance to play them in the playoffs? That's going to be a fun question.
Because we certainly don't get the chance to play them in the regular season.
Yeah, well, when Montana State runs for the hills of wherever they're from, whatever town in Bozeman.
Well, it might be kind of fun because maybe they actually have hills.
Yeah, they have mountains. We know this. They actually have hills. Yeah. We can't run and hide behind anything. There's no trees. It's all flat here. So, but yeah, if Montana State gets a chance to come to the Fargo Dome, boy, that is going to be, I think that's going to be a loud, venomous crowd.
Yes.
It's going to be dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun. So I kind of hope that does happen, maybe in a semifinal type of scenario or even an FCS championship. They're good. They're really good. But again, we'll see how that all plays out. Final topic we have for the local segment, NDSU looks to finally build the shack.
That's what we're starting this. I don't know if anyone else is
starting
this.
I think
yet.
They call it in the NDSU releases. They actually call it the Shack.
I wonder, do you think they refer it to it as that?
I don't think
the athletic offices.
I don't think they do because it's such a ridiculous sounding name. But
well, that's what's happening on here.
We'll call it the Shack.
It is the Shack.
Yeah. And when you think of a Shack, you don't think of something nice.
Well, that's true.
You think of something kind of dilapidated and dirty, and the Shack doesn't really. Kind of
but when it's the Sanford
that.
Health Athletic Center, I mean, how many? Here's the thing:
complex.
Is there going to be anything that or a complex? I'm
doesn't
sorry.
Matter. You still got the C.
Is there anything in that building that is not going to be sponsored?
I hope not.
I mean, because they're going to have it's Shields Court or Shields Arena at the Sanford Health Athletic Complex, and the Ingsteads are sponsoring the media room and the locker room, and somebody's going to be sponsoring the basketball, regular part. Somebody else is sponsoring the little black lines in the middle of the basket, as the basketball is that keeping it together or whatever.
Right.
I think somebody sponsored the restrooms. I think they're going to have everything sponsored by the time it gets
done. But
when
it's a $41 million project, which I believe is what they send out a press release. They got a big grant or a big donation from the Ingsted family on Thursday, or at least it was released on Thursday night. And then Friday morning, I think they talked about the fact that it's something like a $41 million project now for this Sanford Health and Athletic Complex. The Shack. Well, we're going to go Shack. It's the Shack. So the question I have, advertising aside, does this change the game for both the men's and women's basketball programs?
Boy, it's with the men's, that's really interesting because the men's team has been able to get some really good talent in a really, really terrible building. I mean, and that says a lot about what those guys have been able to do. Does a building? I don't know. It'd be interesting to get in the mind of different recruits. Are there recruits out there, really good student athletes out there, that said, "I'm not coming to NDSU because your building is terrible"?
Yes, there have been.
Okay.
Saul Phillips was on the Mike McFeely show earlier this week, on Friday, in fact, and he said that flat out. He said, "Recruits have told me no because the building was so terrible." And I have no reason to not believe Saul Phillips saying that.
I love Saul. Saul's one of the favorite people I've interviewed. Saul has a lot of reasons to say that if it's not necessarily true.
I think it is true. I would say, as a recruit, looking at where you played, if my choices were coming down to South Dakota State and NDSU, and I went to a game at both places, got a chance to watch it, and I watched how everything worked inside and out with NDSU, and I watched how everything worked with inside and out with SDSU, and at the end of the day, I'd look, coaches are amazing, the program you run is amazing, both you guys, but I don't want to play in this arena, and I have to worry about practice time with the baseball team and track and field and how cold and hot it gets in this building. I don't want to play in my father's Quonset for 4 years. I want to go play in a nice arena that's new, that feels like college basketball.
I'd be interested to hear what names.
He wasn't going to name names, obviously.
I know.
But you're right. I would be too. To see,
I'm just merely pointing out that Saul has a lot of reasons to say that even if it isn't necessarily true. So I've known Saul for a lot of years, and I don't know that he's ever lied to me at any point. But I'm just merely pointing out that he would have reasons to.
Another story that he talked about was the recruiting of Michael Tweet.
Okay.
And they made it a point in his recruitment when he came to visit to not show him the locker rooms.
Interesting.
At the BSA.
Okay.
Because they were so terrible. And he signed, came to NDSU and played without ever seeing the locker rooms.
Okay.
And obviously he had to, but, to me, this arena, and we've covered games in there for, 6 years now for me, for eight for you.
Nine
now. It's a bad place.
It is
a dump. It is a dump of an arena, and it needs to go. And I truly believe for the men's basketball team, it changes things. I think it does. I think that now.
So what do they go to? Do you because a game changer right now? They're a typical mid-major that's good, not your and maybe mid-major strong. They're probably a typical low major that's good in the area because a good low major wins.
Every 3 years.
Wins every 3 or 4 years. Yep. And, they get a good team, a good group of seniors. They reload and come back a few years later. So if this is a game changer, are we expecting them to become a team that's more consistently, are we, an Oral Roberts type?
Yes.
I think that
is now the expectation.
Okay.
The Shields Center will see more than 5,700 fans for basketball as a two-court basketball training facility. The West Side Addition will house human performance facilities, strength and conditioning, sports medicine, rehabilitation areas. This is going to be big time. And that's what I'm expecting is there's going to be a consistency where instead of every 3 years where you saw NDSU went out and reloaded and the senior class is now where they're supposed to be.
Yep.
I think we're going to see it more so being, okay, well, they lost this guy, but they have these guys coming in. And these recruits are choosing this place because this place looks – I mean, it looks like maybe a Missouri Valley type of, well, maybe not that because they actually have some really big arenas in the Missouri Valley. But it's getting to that point where now we're on par where, hey, we've got a great head coach. We've got a great past here. We've got guys who have been good enough to be looked at by the NBA. Don't look at the arena. We've got now we can say, hey, look, here's our program. Here's the arena. You know, I think it puts us on that advantage. I really do.
That's true. I mean, it removes one of the boxes that you can say that, okay, you know, this is not going to be a selling point. It maybe adds another selling point, but it'll be interesting. And like you said, that's going to be the expectations now because, you know, there's not that reason for losing a recruit anymore.
Right.
You don't have that.
The reason you lose the recruit is just because he picks another school based on how he feels, not how the arena looks.
Yeah.
So I think it does that. For the women's program, I don't think it's a game changer because there's a lot of things that need to change within that women's program to get better. But, you know, then again, maybe there will be a couple of women recruits that go, you know, it's between here and South Dakota State. I'm going to go NDSU because I like the direction we're going here and the arena is very nice and shiny and I want to be part of that program that introduces the new arena. I don't know. There's a lot more problems with the women's basketball team that they need to get corrected before I can say it being a quote-unquote game changer. Will it help? Yes, because it's going to help any program no matter what. You're going to see the effects of this, I think, throughout NDSU athletics because you're going to be able to get possibly track and field recruits. Not that that's been a problem, but you might get even better ones going, here's a really nice arena. We've got our separate arena for practicing in now.
Yeah.
Here's what everything is set up.
I'm more curious to see what the environment is going to be like because 5,500 still seems like a lot. I mean, that can still be kind of cavernous.
Yes.
And that's the biggest complaint with the current one is that, it's great. Our basketball arena seats, 6,500 or something like that. That's awesome. Well, 3,000 people show, around 3,000 people show up to your average men's game.
Yeah.
And which isn't a terrible number, but it feels kind of empty.
It does.
And how, are enough people going to show up to really make this a home, make it a home court advantage and not be just a nice building that's still half empty?
And again, that goes back to being consistent 2 years, every 2 years, mm-hmm. being able to be at the top, because if you stay on that level, fans respond.
Yep.
You know, fans have a tough time going, all right, here's year four. Let's get on the bandwagon. You know, fans want to be on the bandwagon year in, year out. They want it to be, all right, we've got a really good team this year. Let's go check them out instead of they're young. They'll get there, but we got to wait a couple years. I think that could be something that, again, when it comes to the men's and women's basketball programs, that's what needs to happen. But when it comes to the women's program, there's just a lot more things that need to take place in order for you to be, all right, here's our arena. Choose us or South Dakota State. We're right on par with that. There's some other things that need to change. Not saying that it can't, but they've got more of a hill to climb than the men's team. So, I think it's a game changer for the men, and I hope that proves to be true. Let's move on to
regional.
Okay, regional NFL. We'll start there because I want to talk about the fact that Josh Freeman now is going to change the Minnesota Vikings, and that was their whole problem, wasn't it? They needed a new quarterback. I mean, that was the whole crux behind the issue, wasn't it, Viking fans? Wasn't the defense.
Well, ease up here. Ease up here. Come on.
Ugly did they look today?
I've been telling you that they've been bad all year. This wasn't a shock.
Here's me.
They're not a good... Wrong, yeah. Wrong, you're finally wrong, admitting it. Wrong. It's taken me several weeks.
I've been wrong.
Yes.
What I saw today was ugly. It wasn't even close. It didn't even seem like Minnesota wanted to be there. Yeah, they just looked bad. They looked really bad. And I said, trying to defend the whole Christian Ponder fiasco, that it's not Ponder that's the biggest issue here, which is what fans wanted to blame it on.
Yeah.
The biggest issue was the defense. When you could have been 3-1 by the bye, and your defense let you down two times, you know, that to me is not a Christian Ponder issue. Again, today proved it. The defense couldn't do anything. Offense looked really bad too, but the defense couldn't stop Cam Newton if it was just him out there.
Yeah.
So, again, go out and get Josh Freeman. Yeah, okay, you're right. Okay, we've got that. Go out and get Josh Freeman. Is he going to change things for this team?
No, not really. I mean, my argument wasn't this season, because I frankly don't care about this season for the Vikings, because as you said, there's too many problems with this team to have somebody come in and all of a sudden be the savior, and that's going to transform them into a playoff team. That wasn't going to happen. Looking forward, big picture, looking forward, the only way you do any sort of damage with Christian Ponder as your quarterback is if you have an elite historic style defense.
Right.
And that's just the all the pieces that need to go into that. It's easier to upgrade from the 30th best quarterback in the league, and if you go to find somebody who's the 15th or 10th best quarterback in the league, then you still have to upgrade those other positions, but the level of upgrading that you need to do is changed a little bit.
Here's, I think, the hope for the Vikings front office and the brass is that Josh Freeman comes in and proves to them that he wants to play in Minnesota, that he wants to be a part of the franchise, and that he comes in and he solidifies the quarterback position, because by bringing him in and then having him start over Christian Ponder, I think that we need to accept Ponder's done.
Yes, and we had this discussion last week, and
yes,
that this should have signified, and why Leslie Frazier's comments were just so weird. I mean, they were just weird that you bring in this guy, and when Christian's healthy, he's our starting quarterback. No, you don't. Then you're either lying to us, or there's not enough communication happening between you and the front office, because
right,
you don't bring in a $3 million quarterback for just this year if he's not going to play. You don't bring in a $3 million third-string quarterback.
Yeah. So when you look forward for the Vikings, you want Josh Freeman to be the quarterback of the future. At least you hope he plays.
That 25-touchdown, 6-interception guy that he was a couple years ago.
And you want him to be a team leader. There was reports with Tampa Bay that there was a lot of issues between Greg Schiano and Josh Freeman, which are probably true, because I guess Schiano's just an idiot.
That's the way to put it, yeah.
But the fact that he's showing up late for team pitchers, which I, from a team standpoint, is a huge deal.
Well, but there's reports out there, though, that he was fined for not showing up for a team pitcher, but that he was told by the coach not to show up for it.
Oh, really?
That was, I read a report that he was told not to show up for the team picture, and then he got fined for not showing up for it.
Ah, see.
So there was a lot of stuff in Tampa Bay, and maybe some of it was Freeman's fault. And I'm usually those kind of things do go two ways, because you don't ever hear, it doesn't matter if it's the biggest jerk in the world that's the coach. You don't hear that with Peyton Manning. You don't hear that with those guys. So
no, I see what you mean. So, yeah, I think you need to have him show that he's going to be the quarterback of the future, so you don't have to worry about that. You don't have to worry about the future with the quarterback situation for the Vikings, and you can move forward and you can address the real issues, which is the defense at this point. Green Bay, Chicago, Detroit all win. Any surprise there for you, Brad?
I'm not really. I mean, Detroit's a little bit better than I thought they would be. And granted, they played Cleveland today, and there were a couple of things that happened in that game. Maybe one of the worst interceptions I've seen ever.
Oh, really?
By Brandon Wheat. Oh, it was brutal. He scrambled out to his left and kind of threw a little underhanded backhand, just trying to flip it out to, I don't know. I think he had a running back there, but it was a long way and it just floated up there and it was picked off. It was even Brett Favre said it was bad.
The Wrangler commercial?
In the Wrangler commercial.
I wear Wrangler jeans and Brandon Wheaton threw a bad interception.
Mm-hmm.
Wrangler jeans.
Mm-hmm.
Wrangler. Yeah, no, the Detroit thing, yeah, not too surprising when you beat Cleveland. You obviously should unless you're Minnesota. Chicago 4-2, Green Bay is now starting to rebound after a slow start, 1-2. But you weren't really surprised by it. I was more so because I think their defense is not really that good. I think that would be the reason they falter.
Yeah.
Detroit though, I guess
it was at the Browns, so I'm not going to be singing high praises.
No,
but
Green Bay's win again impressive because they played Baltimore in Baltimore, but when you really think about it,
and
they should have buried
when you're without
Baltimore.
Two of your three receivers.
Yeah,
I mean that hit to Cobb looked bad. I mean, he took a shot to the knee that did not look good. And then Jordy Nelson was the only guy that they had left. Who am I missing? Cobb was out, and who's the other guy? James Jones. He was out as well, or was taken out, where wasn't able to finish the game. So that was, you know, that was a good thing. But Eddie Lacy had a solid game, rushed for over 100 yards, and what, 3 out of 4 games now the Packers have had.
They're going, yeah.
Rusher after having 44 straight without one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's they're bouncing out, and like I said, I expect Green Bay to be at the top of that division by the end of the season.
And Chicago bouncing back, they're now 4-2. They might have had a bye this week, actually, is what I'm...
No, they played the...
I can't find the score right now.
They played the Thursday night game.
They did play the Thursday night game. That's why I couldn't find the score.
Yep.
And, well, the Giants we can get into, because the Giants now look really bad, don't they?
You want to play your – well, we already did that last week. I've already bailed on the Giants.
Yes.
That was E. Me.
That's all you.
That's not good.
That's not good.
So I've
we'll,
already
We'll get to that in the national section here. We've got the quarterback situation. We touched on the NFC North a little bit. Well, the NFC North will end up being the funnest division, and the Vikings won't be included
the
in
funnest?
It.
Funnest?
The most fun.
Oh, my gosh.
Funnest is a word.
Oh, my gosh.
I can use the word funnest.
Okay. You can.
Do you have a problem with me using the word?
I do.
What's your problem with me using the word funnest?
Because it's most fun. Funnest is not good. It's not good.
I
just staring at each other does not
tap your belt. Tap your belt.
It's right here. It's right here.
Let's talk about Jerry Kill and this leave of absence that he's taking.
Yeah.
Is this leave of absence a sign of more permanent things to come for the Golden Gopher program?
I mean, it's got to be considered at least. I mean, it's so tough because I'm not a doctor. I don't want to play one on a podcast. But my gosh, it's just that's got to be so difficult on everybody involved with that to never know what's going to happen with your head coach. I mean, the most important person in the program, and to not know what's going to be going on a week-to-week basis with him and how he's doing. I mean, I hope he's healthy, and I hope he does whatever he needs to do and whatever that means to get there.
It's a very, how do I put this, diplomatic answer of you. It's a very politically
correct
answer.
That's really what
answer.
I was going for.
I want a real answer, though, from you. Will he be the coach, and this is a real question, will he be the coach by the end of this season for the Golden Gophers?
You're asking me to predict?
Predict.
Okay, I won't say whether he should or shouldn't. Do I think he will be after by first game next season? Do I think Jerry Kill will be the head coach of the Golden Gophers? I'm going to say no.
Okay. Do you see them making a move as we tie it back locally, looking up north?
They can look. Good luck.
You don't think Bull would go?
No. I don't.
Why not?
Because I don't think you leave a program that's going to win double-digit games every year to go to a team that is going to be the eighth or ninth best team in your conference.
And it goes back to the conversation we had, I think,
it was a few weeks ago.
Last week maybe even, of that you don't leave the situation at Craig Bull's age, he's 55, to go to a situation where you go, all right, well, this is going to take 10 years.
Yeah, where it's a massive rebuilding project. And Yeah. With what? Gopher football, the glory days go back to the 50s.
Right. Or the 30s, in fact.
And that, okay. And that's it. That's all you got. So, no, I see the Gophers taking a look at him. Yes. Do I see him going? No.
I think, personally, that he might leave midseason. That he's going to find out that the job is just too stressful, that that level of football is just too stressful. He needs to control his health issues, epilepsy, and that he's just going to have to move on from the program, which is unfortunate. But, you know, it starts to affect fans. It starts to affect the players, more importantly, that their head coach isn't going to be there. It starts to filter down, because when the head coach isn't the rock that he should be, everything else becomes in question. Now your defensive coordinator's taking on extra responsibilities. Your offensive coordinator's taking on extra responsibilities. Everybody has to step up without really any direction there from the guy who should be in charge. So, yes, I'm with you. If I was to ask myself the question, I don't think he will be the coach next year for the Golden
Gophers. I don't think
they'll
make an announcement midseason.
I think they will.
I think they'll at least wait out the season and visit with him at that point to see what they want to do going forward. I don't think they'll make a move midseason.
Here's another question. Does he come back at all this season?
I would bet he'll try to, yes.
Okay. And again,
that just seems like the type of person he is. That, yeah, if he can, that yes, I think he'll come back.
The reason that he didn't have to, or he didn't come, or he's not coaching right now, is because he had another seizure or another episode during the week that he was supposed to be coaching the Golden Gophers when they took on Michigan. And so now he said, I'm just going to take a leave of absence, an open-ended leave of absence. I need to get the epilepsy under control. We'll move on from there. Again, I don't think he comes back, and I think they say we've moved on with him, because to wait until the end of the season, if you know what your decision's going to be, I think they're going to find out what their decision is so they can move on, get a head coach, and just restart everything.
Yeah.
You know? Again, the Gopher fans, Gopher alum, Gopher Nation, stupid name. The Gophers in general consider themselves a big-time program, and they're not. They're really not.
No.
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 No. We'll move on from that. We'll get into
national.
And so, top of the charts here, I have FBS Top 25 Roundup. Biggest surprise in the FBS over the weekend was Stanford losing at Utah, which not a lot of people heard about because it happened really late. You know, one of those West Coast times, West Coast games, Stanford lays an egg. Were you surprised?
I mean, at Utah? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you're obviously a little surprised anytime a top 10 team loses to an unranked team. And Stanford, a team that's been very, very consistent for a little while now. But the other side of it is, you know, these things happen. They just do. These things happen.
Are you surprised with how good Missouri and Texas A&M have been in the SEC?
Well, Texas A&M, they hit the jackpot with Manziel.
Right.
So, I mean, we'll see how consistent they can be.
How about Missouri this year?
That's a big win. Ranked 25, go on the road at Georgia and win in the swamp. I mean, in Georgia. I mean, that's...
Well, not in the swamp.
Yeah, not in the swamp.
Not
Georgia.
No, that's Florida. And
yeah,
Georgia sure would eviscerate you for even thinking so.
Yeah, yeah. I've caused us our Vermilion listeners, and all our folks down in Athens are gone too. The biggest surprise actually for me, though, even away from those, how about Texas?
Yeah. Wasn't even close.
No, 16-point win over Oklahoma.
And they're also 3-0 in the Big 12.
Yeah.
Mack Brown. He's responding.
Yeah, he is. He, I think he wants one more decent season. I mean, he's gone at the end of this year. I think if he wins out, I think he's still gone at the end of this
year.
You
really do?
Yeah.
He has a really tough schedule to end things out. He's at TCU next week, or in 2 weeks. They have a bye this week. Kansas at West Virginia, but he ends the season. Oklahoma State, Texas Tech at Baylor.
Yeah.
We'll see. Maybe they jump back into the top 25 with this one. I'm thinking they do. Those couple losses, the losses to BYU and Ole Miss, really stand out. But once they started playing familiar opponents, they started to get on track. Iowa State probably should have beat Iowa State. Shouldn't have beat Iowa State. My apologies there. But again, we'll see. We'll see.
I think he's done either way.
Here's another question. Bowl to Texas.
I don't think Texas goes for bowl.
No.
No. If they ask, Bowl would say, yep,
Gone. In a heartbeat. Yeah.
Bye-bye.
If Texas came knocking and said, you're our first candidate for the coaching job, would you like it? You know, no interview or whatever. You go, yeah, all right.
Yep.
I'll take it.
Yep. But no, I don't know. I don't see it.
NFL roundup as we move to that. Anything catch your eye in the NFL so far this week? Niners beat the Cardinals. It's not surprising.
Great. Patriots-Saints game was really good. That was a ton of fun to watch. Yeah, just a remarkable late drive by Tom Brady. He's
doing
really
it again.
Good. He's really, really good.
He is really good. Texans. Oof.
Yeah.
Things are looking bad.
Should the Vikings think we can give up a seventh-round pick? Let's get Matt Schaub in here. Let's just make this we'll turn this into a reality show.
Quarterback Redemption Island.
Maybe we Houston, keep all we these guys for next year.
Yep.
And we get on Hard Knocks.
Maybe.
I think that would be a blast.
And just have it be the quarterback situation?
Yeah. And then
just have random shots of Sam Ponder for no reason?
Yeah. I like it.
Christian Ponder. Just have the Christian Ponder on there, but have Sam Ponder.
Yeah.
The Christians, it's not even there. Houston, we have a problem. I had to say it. The Texans are really, they're looking bad, which puts their head coach, Gary Kubiak.
Kubiak.
I hate pronunciations. it puts him on the hot seat. Looking around, Eagles with a 31-20 win.
Steelers finally got a win.
Yeah, well, good for them. They beat the Jets.
The Jets, who were everyone's darlings last week.
You know why?
Because they won.
Yes, because they're from New York.
Here's the deal. I think Rex Ryan is a highly underrated coach. I really do.
I think so, too.
I think he's a good, good coach.
I think he's a smart coach for not playing Tebow.
Yes.
So I have to agree with you in that standpoint, that he is kind of an underrated coach. Coaching hot seat. Who's your top one?
Greg Schiano. I don't know how he's still sitting down. I mean, he's going to get... He's got to get some toasty buns here right about now. It's not good.
Number two?
Yeah.
You're going to say it, aren't you?
I mean, I know you want me to say Tom Coughlin, and it's getting real hard not to look his direction. But
right.
Again, and if it was anywhere else, if it was anywhere outside of a New York team or your Cowboys or, I mean, maybe. Is that it? Maybe?
Maybe.
That he would be on the hot seat? Are those the only places that he could possibly be on the hot seat?
Or where he's at now, East Coast teams?
Yeah. I mean, the dude's just a good football coach. He's having it's not a good year for him, but he managed to win in Jacksonville.
Yeah, okay? This is true.
He managed to take they were second-year expansion team to the AFC Championship game?
Right.
I mean, and then he comes to the Giants and wins two Super Bowls with Eli Manning as their quarterback, who I know you strongly dislike. But, I mean, he managed to – he's just a good coach. And in the NFL, in a league that's designed for teams not to be able to win every single year, that's designed to try to keep every team as C-plus teams.
But 0-6, though. I'll go back to that. You can have down years.
Yep.
But you can't have 0-6. That to me is a glaring. If you're a good coach, I'm not saying he's not a good coach, but if you're a coach that has some kind of handle on a team, you can get a win or get some better play somewhere. They're just not playing good right now.
They aren't, but to say that all of a sudden, hey, 2 years ago, this guy is one of the best coaches in the league because he won a Super Bowl. This year, this guy has forgotten everything that he knows about football, and he's a terrible coach.
And I'm not saying he's a terrible coach, but he's number two on the hot seat because at 0-6, it's the same thing that happened in Philadelphia. Time for maybe a change of scenery. And when you start out 0-6, that change of scenery, you want it to happen faster.
One of the things that he does have going for him is he doesn't have a knee-jerk ownership group in there.
No, that's true.
It's a pretty decent ownership group that I think sees a little bit big picture than what obviously the media and fans do there. So I'm it's getting harder and harder for me to argue against him, but I don't see it happening. I just don't. Ron Rivera's still there.
Yep.
I mean, he's
as number three. What about Kubiak?
Yeah, I think he's He's probably my number two.
Okay. I'll keep Tom Coughlin.
Yeah. I'm going to go Kubiak. I'm still not going to put Coughlin on my list. I'm going to put Rivera at three, and I'm going to put Kubiak at two. I don't know. Kubiak might be a guy where the only reason he makes it through the season is because he's been there a long time.
What about outside looking, maybe Mike Smith of Atlanta right now, if they continue to have things go bad?
Not yet, but he would be a real early candidate next year.
And it depends on who becomes available as well.
I mean, and that's just it. Do you think you can get Gruden? Do you think you can lure back Cowher? I mean,
I think maybe there'll be some openings. Again, Coughlin, would it be better for him to be in Atlanta next year? You know, that's a question.
I would like Coughlin in Atlanta, actually.
How everything works out, you'll see how it goes. But to me, right now, I still have Rivera at three. Watching what they did, Vikings are bad. However, I like the Panthers. I like their run defense, and I like their run offense. And I think those are two things
The run offense is D'Angelo Williams. Let's not get carried away.
And Cam Newton.
Yeah. I don't know. And Cam Newton's still a little too much of a wild card, too much of a, when things are going great, it's really great, but when things are going bad, I'm going to pout. I don't like that, my quarterback.
All right, let's get to our last topic here. We'll skip the as the fan thing.
Okay.
Give me NBA preview time.
Yeah.
I know you love the NBA.
I do.
Give me your Eastern Conference top five teams and why.
I have the Miami Heat. I have LeBron James. I have the Miami Heat. I have Miami and Miami as my top five teams.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
LeBron James, you, me, Michael Howe, and one of the guys I used to play high school ball with. I think we could probably finish third in the East.
Okay. That's the end of the podcast.
Yeah. I mean, it's Miami and it's everybody else. I really believe that. And my top five teams, I think Miami's my number one. I'm finding it hard to believe you're going to argue with that.
Yeah, no, I can't.
Okay. Chicago number two. Tom Thibodeau, holy smokes. Coaches like that usually burn their players out after a couple of years, and they get, man, I'm sick of this guy making me work so hard every night. And Chicago, that will, if it's just he get hit the money with the right group of personalities there, but that hasn't been the case. Derrick Rose has looked good in the couple of preseason thing. I mean, he hasn't looked afraid driving to the basket, which is the biggest worry with him.
That was a big worry for him because of his knee and
So
taking a whole year off.
Yep. So I mean, I think Chicago vaults into that number two spot.
Okay.
The games that are going to be ugly but fun at the same time are going to be Chicago Indiana games.
Yes.
Those are going to be a blast, I think.
Physical.
There's
fun.
Going to be a fight, at least one fight in a Chicago Indiana game this year, and it's probably going to be.
So.
It's definitely going to involve Joakim Noah. And it's going to be, and it's also going to involve probably Carlos Boozer, who is the NBA athlete that looks like, or the NBA player who looks like he could immediately become a pro wrestling villain.
Oh, he could.
Yeah.
I'm not a big Carlos Boozer fan, but
yeah, I think he could step right into the ring, and I think he's got a career there.
Yeah, oh, yeah. He'll win a belt.
Yes.
So we've got Miami, Chicago, Indiana. Give me your other two top five teams.
I got the Brooklyn Nets, the retooled Brooklyn Nets. Maybe not as a regular season because they're going to rest a lot and KG's going to spend a lot of time.
How many nagging injuries are these guys going to have?
Sitting in a massage. I think they're actually going to have massage chairs on court side so that these guys, while they're not in the game, can sit there and relax and kind of keep everything loose. They might have some like board games or maybe a pinochle deck set up along the sidelines.
Shuffleboard.
Yeah, maybe a little bit of that too. Yeah. But come playoff time, I think they're going to be – you do not want to play them.
Daily
really
naps for Brooklyn.
Yeah. Mid-game naps.
Yeah,
yes.
It won't be a halftime speech. It'll just be a halftime nap.
Yes.
No, I agree. And then your final team?
The Knicks.
Yeah. By default, really. I mean, there is nobody else in the East.
Default, not defense, because they are going to shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot. I feel a little bad for Tyson Chandler because he is now that who did they bring in to really help him out? Andrea Bargnani. Yeah,
hey.
He's going to play some. Oh, no. Carmelo Anthony's. No. Ray Felton.
Nobody plays defense
for
New York.
No. except for Tyson Chandler.
They're fun offensively.
Yes.
They'll be a lot of fun to watch offensively. The top five teams for me are exactly the same, and back to the whole Miami thing, yes.
Yeah.
I see that too.
Unless LeBron James all gets hurt.
That's really the only thing.
He's proven either he does or both Bosch and Wade do. Because he's proven he can kind of carry it with one of them not playing well and being hurt.
He proved in Cleveland he can carry it by himself too.
True, but that was a terrible Eastern Conference. And this is actually a pretty deep Eastern Conference. A top heavy. Deep is wrong. They're top heavy.
I was going to say, I'm looking around going, well, you're 6, 7, and 8 really don't.
The top four teams have a chance to be really, really good.
They do. I agree. And I think that that's going to follow that script. The Eastern Conference, really nothing too surprising coming at you. Do you have the Heat representing the East in the NBA Finals? No question.
Yes, yes.
Conference MVP is going to be LeBron. We'll go conference MVP because I know it's an NBA MVP, but we'll go conference MVP for the sake of the...
And we're
not disagreeing here at all either,
And it's LeBron just... He might not... I could see voter fatigue, like when Karl Malone won the MVP a couple times over MJ just because people got tired of giving MJ the MVP.
Yeah.
I could see Derrick Rose getting it because if he comes back and is Derrick Rose. But LeBron's just so good. It's just not fair.
Breakout comeback season for you in the Eastern Conference.
The one that I'm going to be really curious to watch is Danny Granger.
And he's coming back from an injury as well.
Yes, and that could make Indiana really scary. If he's able to slide and fit in after Paul George's breakout year and George Hill and Roy Hibbert, they've got a team that's going to be deep, young, and very, very talented. And if he's able to come in and find a role within what they were able to build on last year, Indiana's going to be a bear for any team in the playoffs.
Defensively, they're very outstanding. I love how physical they are.
Yes.
Roy Hibbert.
He's very tall.
Yeah, that's what they say.
Yes.
If he can develop into something reasonably good on offense, which it seemed like he was doing towards the end of the playoffs, they're going to be tough. That's the one thing you notice that really throws the Heat off their game is a physical interior presence.
Yes.
When you have nobody for the Heat, and they don't, to move somebody off the blocks and allow that driving lane for LeBron to get to the hole, that's tough. I think the biggest question or the biggest wondering last year in the playoffs was LeBron James towards the end of the game. And I can't remember if it was the semis. I think it was the semis. Or was it the finals between Indiana and Miami? But they took Hibbert out.
Yeah.
At one point. Close game. It was a pivotal matchup, too. Took Hibbert out for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. If it was foul trouble, didn't matter. At that point, LeBron's going, all right, defend me going to the hole. That's where Indiana can set themselves apart, is they defensively are a better team than a lot of teams in the East. I think they could be a number two. Oh, the top five, this is no way that's how it's going to go, follow that script. I think Indiana could be number two.
I think it's possible.
I think it is possible. Because we don't know what Derrick Rose is going to get. We don't know what we're going to get out of Derrick Rose. He's going to be my comeback breakout player of the year. That's what I think is going to happen.
I thought you'd go Greg Oden.
No. if he makes the team, that would be that would be the hope. But I really do think it's going to be.
If his knees are made of something other than Play-Doh?
Yes. Yeah. Derrick Rose. No, well, Greg Oden. Same. Bad knees.
Yeah.
Here's a question for you.
Okay.
Do you think Nate Walters makes the Bucks?
I wish you'd have asked me this like 5 minutes before the podcast so that I could have looked at their roster. Possibly. Yeah, sure. Why, I don't know. This is a Dan Gunderson answer, but yeah, why not?
I'm looking at their roster a little bit here.
The only thing that
guard wise,
yeah, with Milwaukee, the only thing with them though is that they're kind of in the owner's kind of a, hey, I want to win now, because isn't Herb Cole their owner and he's like 98 years old or something like that, and doesn't want to. I don't know that he cares about young guys. If somebody can give us some decent minutes or something, let's get him in there. But then they're also really cheap. I think they're like, yeah. So I don't know. I'll say yes, but I don't feel great about it.
Here's the problem that you're finding. Guards are Carlos Delfino, Brandon Knight, O.J. Mayo, Gary Neal, Trey McKinney-Jones is a higher draft pick. He's in there. Luke Ridenour. And then you have Nate Walters. And I get that there's name recognition with all those guys, but even so, Walters, where does he fit in? Fourth guard? Fourth point guard?
Sixth guard. Yeah. I mean, sixth guard is practice squad.
You know O.J. Mayo is going to be there. Brandon Knight.
Delfino
will be there. Gary Neal will be there. Yep. It becomes, does Luke Ritenour make the team, which I think he does because he's a solid point guard. They're not going to give up on Trey McKinney-Jones. Miami guy, he's a rookie. And then, again, it comes down to, does Nate Walters have a spot on this team? How guard-heavy do you want to be if you're the Bucks?
Yeah.
You know? You got to look at the roster, and it looks to me, and he's a good player, there's no doubt about it, but that just proves to you how tough it would be to make the NBA, because we're looking at it right now and going, I don't know if he can. Yeah. I really don't know if he can make this roster.
Yeah.
I hope he does.
Yeah.
Just for the fact that Ben Woodside got a tryout but never made a roster.
He did a few summer leagues. Yep. But, yeah.
And then he's happy in Europe. Mm-hmm. You know, making a ton of money. He's a great player over in Europe. I just want to see Nate Walters, somebody out of the Summit League other than a forward or a center, make some noise.
Well, George Hill.
Oh, yes, George Hill, but I said forward or center, so there you go.
You said someone other than a forward or center.
Right.
Yeah.
George Hill's a forward.
No, he's not. George Hill's a point guard.
I always think of him back when he was playing for IUPUI, and he was a forward there, but I suppose, he's
a point guard.
He's a point guard. So, yeah, well, there was George Hill. Okay, so, boy. Yeah. And that's how we'll end the 015 podcast of the Pinto and White Shadow Show. Again, thank you for listening. I'm Daniel Pinto Garnison. You can follow me on Twitter, not Facebook, on Twitter, @PintoKFGO. You can follow my co-host, Brad Jones.
@TheBisonGuy.
Make sure and look us up on iTunes, the Pinto and White Shadow Show. Make sure and, again, follow us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook. Find this podcast on KFGO.com or 740thefan.com. So, for Brad Jones, I'm Daniel Garnison. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your day.